And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus at 1:06 in the afternoon. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel. I want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon on this bitterly cold day once again. This is a broken record, to be honest with you. 6 below with the wind chill of 25 below, with a northwest wind blowing at about 12 miles an hour. Bridget, I don't know about you, but I was seeing some posts on a couple of Facebook pages. They're starting calving season down in Nebraska. At least one rancher is, and they've got record cold down there. He's like, "Come on, please, let's get some help." And there is going to be help from Mother Nature as we head into the weekend. Much, much warmer weather on the way. Finally.
Well, it's good. Good thing we're going to be talking to a vet later today, because we can talk about all those types of things. But I think one of the easiest questions she can answer, and I know we're going to have lots more, is why do farmers stock up on gray tape or athletic tape this time of year? So we'll talk to her about that and why, and what it has to do with that cold weather for cattle. It'd be interesting to see if any of any of our listeners want to call in and say why they think it is. But we'll have Dr. Emily Fox joining us later.
Stock up on what? On gray tape? Gray tape or what else?
Duct tape.
Okay.
Or athletic tape, like you'd use to wrap up ankles and knees and so forth. Think on that. I'm not going to give the answer away until we're joined by Dr. Emily later today.
Is it just this time of the year? Are you talking calving season, or just
it's
this?
It's pretty particular to this time of the year.
Oh, man! All right, now I got to Google this.
It'll be fun. Yeah, it'll be fun to talk about, and of course that also invites people to give us questions. Maybe they have an answer to my question, which we're going to get the answer for a little bit later. Maybe they have questions for you, Dean, and listeners can certainly reach us 701-293-9000. That's our phone line. Also, if you're following along, some days it's just hard to speak, but if you're following along, Facebook, YouTube, as well as Acres TV, you can go right ahead and reach out to us there in those comments. We'll monitor those as well so we can answer. I try really hard to stay up to speed on our Facebook comments. If I miss one, I do apologize, but I do really try to keep up on what people are asking. So look, check us out in all those places. We're glad you're here.
I found the answer. I never
knew
that.
Don't say it yet.
I know. I'm not. I never. Wow, that is interesting. Interesting. Okay. Huh.
So we're going to get to that because it is calving season. But you said cold weather's leaving on Thursday, which is good because I'm running out of sweaters to wear.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And we do have some warmer weather coming our way, but it's going to take a while to get here. We're still looking at extreme cold and extreme cold warnings through the area for tonight into early tomorrow. We're looking at single-digit highs below zero this afternoon, anywhere between about 1 and 5 below, and then down to 20 below tonight, and wind chills tonight about 40 below again. And Wednesday, we finally climb above zero. We're up to 2 above. Then we're at 7 above on Thursday, right around 20 on Friday, but it won't feel that nice on Friday because the winds are going to be pretty strong out of the southwest as that warmer air pushes into the area. And then the weekend, I hate to say the weekend looks great because we're going to have quite a bit of cloud cover around, but it will be warmer. Low 30s on Saturday, mid to upper 30s on Sunday. There's a couple of weak clipper systems coming our way Sunday and Monday. Could give us a little light rain or light snow or a mixture of the both with temperatures above freezing both days. It'll probably be a mixture of both and favoring the northern valley, especially on Sunday, and a better chance for a little scattered precip on Monday. But all next week, Bridget, it looks like temperatures remain at or above normal. In fact, I see that trend continuing for about 10 days. So that's great news. We'll also see a few clipper systems come through that'll bring us some much needed precip as well. So all in all, at least we're finally getting out of the deep freeze and back into that phase two part of the LRC cycle, which brings us warmer weather, but also brings us quite a few clipper systems that will come into the area. So we'll have to wait and see if any of those pack any punch. Right now, it doesn't look like any of them will, but more than likely, as this second part of the cycles pushes into the area, more than likely we're probably going to have at least one clipper that packs a little punch, so we'll keep an eye on that.
Well, if it packs a little punch, it was just a little one to start with. Maybe that's how we have to define it, right?
There you go.
All right. To this weather update, we want to say thank you to our sponsor for that, and that is Ryan Bonesack. He is with Equitable AgriFinance, providing long-term fixed rates for farmland financing. Check him out. He will work with farmers and ranchers in the area. And Ryan is happy to take your call at 701-261-6529. For those of you who don't have Ryan's phone number updated in your contact information, I did, because that's his number. And keep him in mind anytime you want to be visiting about farmland equity and so much more. So thank you so much, Ryan. Also, you know, we have trade show season going on. I think tomorrow, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, I think tomorrow I will be at the International Crop Expo up in Grand Forks. So for those of you who are unaware, that is a farm show that takes place at the Alaris Center. It really focuses on soybeans, wheat, and potatoes. Simplot will be cooking potatoes, french fries specifically, for lunch tomorrow, so be sure to swing by. There are guest speakers. Tomorrow's is John Newton. He is the executive head of Terrain, which delivers expert insight and confident forecasting in ag market areas for producers. So he's looking at governmental policy, risk management programs, and so much more. So if you want to stop in and hear him, he is going to be the speaker tomorrow from 1 to 2 o'clock. And also, there'll be many other things going on, lots of vendors to visit with. This is often my chance to get into some new equipment, because if I'm going to do a radio show from a farm show, I don't just go sit in the media room. Most of you know that, especially through the live stream, I have the opportunity to sit in farm equipment and show off something new and great. Honestly, if you're looking for a specific piece, if you want me to go find a Fendt tractor versus a John Deere or a Case or something else, why don't you drop us an email, ag@flagfamily.com, or you can find our Facebook page, Weather and Ag in Focus, and let me know if you think there's anything specific I should go climb up into, and then I can just kind of show off the cab and what's going on inside some of these machines. Kind of neat to see what's on the floor for display. And the only people who ever seem to be concerned that I'm in a cab for an entire hour is the kid who was waiting in line, who wanted to get in there, and I was the one who's taking up a whole hour in the tractor. It happens. Kind of happens.
You're just being a kid yourself, that's all.
They are such a great place to be for a farm show, because you've got these great seats that have the elevated armrest, so I have a note plate taking place. They've already got iPads and tablets and so forth in there, so I can mount mine. There have been times where if the speaker system or if my mic isn't working, I've just tuned it in through Bluetooth through the sound system in the cab and use it. So, hey, thanks you guys for providing my best radio show spot possible. Really appreciate that. And in fact, I'm already working on which ones I'll be using when I head on down to the Commodity Classic Farm Show the beginning of March down in Denver. So headed out for that later this month. Looking forward to it. Okay, there's some pop quiz stuff today. One of them is, what's frass? Have you ever heard of insect frass, Dean?
No.
Okay, want to take any guesses? Frass.
F-R-A-S?
F-R-A-S-S. One of our other morning show hosts this morning decided this was his new word of the day. I don't know how many times Kevin has managed to use it yet. But frass is actually the insect droppings. It can also be leftover feed and the molten skins from insects. No. And some farmers actually farm the insects, like yellow mealworms, banded crickets, or black soldier flies. And we've talked about black soldier flies before as a protein source that is being used for livestock feed. Well, the frass, the particular molten skins, etc., can not only be used as a protein source for livestock, but it's being considered as a fertilizer replacement for farm fields. If you think about what's all going on right now, there's the potential of tariffs. We've talked about that several times. And if that should happen, one of the area of crop inputs that'll be most affected will indeed be fertilizer. And if that's the case, folks are looking for a lot of different opportunities to go ahead and have something different for fertilizer. Well, if that is the case, insect frass might be one of the things that can be used. So far, in studies, it is comparable to chicken litter. Fun fact, chicken litter is actually something that's well thought of in the fertilizer realm for its activity in fields. So I don't know how you're going to make up the volume difference between what you get from a chicken barn for chicken litter to all this insect frass, because there's a difference in weight and size, and that's a lot of bugs. That's all I can think that's a lot of bugs.
How much insect excrement are you going to have to get? I mean, that seems like a lot of work.
A lot. If you've ever scouted soybean fields for soybean aphid, if you walk the field and the fields were shiny and sticky, that's actually an insect frass from the aphids as well. I mean, it would just get all over you and just be sticky and awful. So it's there, but not in necessarily the volumes that I think people are considering, unless we're suddenly farming a lot of insects. So it's just one of those studies that's being done, and thought I'd share what's going on and what is frass. Yet another learning moment today.
Interesting. Now I know. See, that would be a good trivia question on trivia night or something.
It will be.
You know?
It will be. And, you know, again, this is probably one of those things that I get to say on air that I normally wouldn't, but I could tell you to kiss my frass.
There you go.
Look, I'm just talking about insects. There you go. Oh, this will keep people on their toes for the day. All right. We're getting up to the chance to hear the market report from the American Farm Network, Northern Farm Network. And we want to do that. We want to catch up on markets. We'll be joined by Dr. Emily Fox shortly. We have a question for her. Dean thinks he's got the answer, and that is, why are farmers stocking up on duct tape or athletic tape as we approach calving season? And then we've got so much more with Dr. Emily. She's got great topics for us today. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. So glad that you're here joining us today. Ooh, are you doing some paperwork, getting ready for taxes, thinking about 2025? Do not overlook the opportunity to visit with Nate Thorsrud. He is owner and family farmer near Grandin, North Dakota. And by owner, he's also the owner of JLA Insurance. Check out what Nate has to offer when it comes to crop insurance. He especially wants to visit with you about hail, etc. He's not going to sell you what you don't need. Because he farms, he understands what you do need. And this is a great opportunity to talk in advance of what might be happening for the 2025 growing season. So you can find Nate at 701-371-0311. If you lose track of that number, you can always give us a call here at 701-293-9000. I'll help you right out. Our guest today, Dr. Emily Fox from the Ashley Veterinary Clinic. Emily, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
Fabulous. So we had a little discussion previously in the first segment where we talked about, Dean was mentioning how the cold weather is happening in Nebraska, and he's got some guys calving down there that they're a little nervous. And I posed the question, why are farmers buying duct tape and athletic tape this time of year as we get ready for calving season? So Dean, did you find an answer to it? And Emily's going to judge if we're right or not.
I did, and I have a question for Emily. So supposedly it's used for to prevent frostbite. And if that is the case, if that is right, how do the cows, or how does the livestock not try and rip that off for whatever rhyme or reason? I would think that would be an irritant to them, and they would try and get that off.
I think some of them do. I don't have any clients that duct tape or athletic tape ears. I think just because with where we are, we'd probably have to do it all the time. But there's all sorts of weird calf bonnets you can find. You can even find these ones where they have these little crochet bonnets that people will make, or there are ones that you can buy online, like ear bonnets. But I think a lot of the time people just try to get them inside and warmed up, because unfortunately for us, with the degree of cold we are, it's not just the ears. You know, the core temperature can drop really fast too. So I don't see a lot of it. But when you first said, what do you need athletic tape for during calving season? I was thinking it was somebody whose calf jack handle was really rough. Cause I know for me, sometimes I had to wrap the jack handle so that it doesn't like burn your hand. And that was actually the first thing that came to my mind even before the calves. There's a lot of use for like vet wrap and duct tape in my life, but none of it is like what you're supposed to use it for at all. I always have a role though. And I also use duct tape for the bottom of casts. Like I do a lot of like casts on baby calves, and I put duct tape I like Gorilla Tape even better. I'm not sponsored by Gorilla Tape, I promise. But I like to Gorilla Tape the bottom of these casts, because these calves go back into like a wet environment, and it's not really like a waterproof cast. It'll degrade, and it, I find a lot of the time with casting, even if the cast itself works, sometimes they can get such a nasty infection in the cast from cast sores and whatnot all that that can actually end up ending their life. So it's really important to me to make the bottom of that cast waterproof. So I get a little nuts with the tape and I'll put like a half a roll of tape on the bottom of the cast. Looks pretty cool when I get done.
Okay.
I hope
there's
that's
a lot of stuff
call.
Going on.
No.
Yes, it is.
I was actually just thinking this phone should not be in this room.
If it is an important call, she's actually a doctor. We got to let her go.
Right? So.
Right. No, it's
okay,
good.
So you said a couple of terms in there that, it's not that I want to call Dino because he doesn't have a background in farming, but he's a perfect example of so many who just don't simply know. So calf jack. Putting casts on calves. Even before we get to the list of topics that you gave me for today, Emily, there's people that just probably said, what is calf jack? What do you mean? And I explained it last week as literally a birthing aid for calving, but I'm maybe not giving the best description.
So a calf jack is essentially something to give us some power to pull the calf out. And it sounds pretty barbaric, but it really is not. It's just a matter of, I don't have as much strength as a cow. So if cows pulled babies out of other cows, which obviously they don't, although that would be really cool, it would be more like a human trying to help another human give birth to their fetus. But I'm trying to get an animal that weighs, 10 times as much as me and pull a baby that already weighs as much as my adult weight sometimes out of that cow. So I do need a little bit of extra leverage sometimes. You have to be really careful with how you apply a calf jack. You have to make sure that it's fair how you're applying it, that the calf is correctly positioned. It's not like you just put it on and let it go, but essentially it's a long bar, most of them, with a kind of a U-shaped thing that goes against the cow's back end. And then you can hook the calf chains onto there or the calf strap, depending on what you use, and gently ratchet back. It almost is like a come along, although I don't like a come along as much as a true calf jack. There are people that will use a winch, a come along, a four wheeler. I generally don't recommend that. My opinion is a lot of the time, if you have to pull that hard, you need to make sure that you're positioned correctly and that everything else is right and have an epidural on board for that cow before you're going to start messing around like that. However, especially for people my size, because I'm not huge, it gives me an ability to really help a cow, or otherwise it would be very hard for me to, fight a fetus the same size as me and try to get it out of the cow.
That's an awesome description. And we forget about that. You are dealing with a newborn calf that can easily weigh 70 or 80 pounds, and you have to maneuver that.
Oh,
flopping
a lot more than that.
Critter. Well, yes, you're right. I was trying to be generous on the 70 to 80. And say,
I should
okay,
find a picture. I've got a picture of one that I think was 160 or 170. Oh, that's a big beast.
God.
Yeah.
What breed was that? What did that come out of?
That was actually, I think it was a Red Sim cross. I'm not 100% sure. That was a big, big calf. But usually, your average calf out of a heifer, depending on your breed and how you breed, obviously, 70, 80 pounds. But then, out of a cow, if a cow is having trouble, I've seen some monsters. And then sometimes, too, you have twins and they're all tangled up. People forget about that. But even if the calf's not big, there's a lot of stuff that can still happen that's not ideal and that does require intervention. That's sometimes where knowledge is more important than a calf jack. If you just... I've heard people, I haven't had it happen, but I've had people tell me that, I was pulling on two legs and nothing was coming. And they finally figured out they had one leg from each calf because they had two calves.
Oh,
so you need to know what
twins.
You're pulling on. Yeah.
Okay. Now you also mentioned casts. So we're talking literally for broken limbs on a newborn calf. Would that be from the sometimes the violence of birth?
So I've actually I'm going to knock on some big wood here. I've actually never broken a leg pulling a calf. I am really, really careful. Part of that is how you apply your calving chains and straps. And if that's something people want to get into, I could put a video online or something, because I do think that that's valuable. But essentially, most of the time when I see broken legs, it's actually because mom or another cow in the pen got up and stepped on the calf. That's the most common. It is possible to break a leg during pulling. It happens occasionally, but that's usually not what happens. Usually it's they got stepped on by their cow.
Oh, okay. That makes a big difference. All right. There's so much more to talk about. One of our favorite guests to have, Dr. Emily Fox with the Ashley Veterinarian Clinic. Stay tuned. We want to visit some more with Emily. We've got lots of topics, and if you have some, you can certainly reach us. 701-293-9000, and we'll be back right after bottom of the hour news. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus and a fun calving conversation with Dr. Emily Fox of the Ashley Veterinary Clinic. So, Emily, we had a bit of a discussion amongst Dean and Addison and myself before we came back on air. And Dean, do you want to kick off your question?
Yeah, sure. So, Emily, what is the biggest danger during calving season coming up here?
Addison thought it was the vet
bills.
The biggest
danger to the human, to the cow, to the calf. There's a lot of danger.
All three.
So to the calf, certainly right now, hypothermia, you know, the temperatures are wildly cold. And even if a calf is born perfectly healthy, it's wet, the calf, when it comes out, and it is way too cold to be calving outside right now. So, you know, if a cow were to drop a calf early right now or something, I would say that this cold is tremendously dangerous. Beyond that, you know, certainly being born malpositioned, I would say the number one danger to calves in terms of ongoing health is a failure of passive transfer or a lack of colostrum. I see this every year, and it's really frustrating because people bring these calves to me that are failure of passive transfer calves, didn't get adequate colostral antibodies from their mother because they didn't suck within the first couple hours of life. And there's nothing I can really do. I mean, if I had a time machine and a magic wand, I could fix them all, but I have neither. And unfortunately, the reality is the calves are born with these pores in their gut. And they're open, but they kind of start to close the moment they're born. And by the time they're 12 to 24 hours old, they're pretty well closed. And when they get colostral antibodies from their mother, so antibodies to different diseases that their mother passes in her first milk, they have to go through those pores. The faster they are delivered to the stomach, the more antibodies the calf will take in and the stronger its immune system going forward. If you do not get adequate colostrum into that cow within a couple hours of birth, which right mom doesn't always do, or sometimes the calf doesn't get up, if you don't help and get that done and make sure it's done, that calf will likely not develop a good functional immune system and will likely have problems throughout its life. A lot of those become chronics. And there's really not a ton I can do other than try to support them along. So that's one of my biggest frustrations and one of the hardest things for me in my job, certainly. And probably the biggest danger to calves after they're born healthy is not getting adequate colostrum. For the cows, the biggest danger would probably be a uterine prolapse. Either if you pull too hard or if the cow pushes too hard, her whole uterus can come out after the calf. The danger of that is the uterus has a pretty big blood vessel in it that can rupture. And if it ruptures, the cow won't live. So it's important to get those replaced right away and make sure we don't hit that vessel while we're doing it and stitch them back in so that the cow doesn't pass away. And then in terms of humans, I would say inadequate facilities and lack of sleep definitely both contribute, especially when combined with weather. I've definitely seen some people maybe put themselves in situations they shouldn't and get really injured. Sometimes cows can get very protective, or sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, the facilities not being adequate. But I've definitely been in some pretty dangerous situations, and I've seen some producers in some pretty dangerous situations as well.
So one of the things that we were going to talk about today was, as we approach calving season, you really start to see some of those congenital defects that can happen, whether they're through basic genetic breeding decisions, et cetera. And recently there was a set of quad calves born down in South Dakota, which is very unusual. So at this, when you think about that, where do some of these things come from? Is it always through the breed, or can something else happen in the environment that changes the potential for quads, conjoined twins, any of those sorts of things?
Absolutely. Before I answer your question, I grabbed something during the break because you asked.
Oh, good.
I don't know if you can see it well, but I grabbed a calf jack just so that everybody can see what I was talking about. So this is one of those instruments that you put on the cow's rear, and then this little thing ratchets back on your chain. Your chain would attach right here and helps you pull the legs along, and you pull back to get some leverage. So that's just, I know they look kind of weird, but they are really a cool thing to have. Most producers have their own. And there's a lot of variation as to what brand and what style people like. It's very much a hot button topic for some people. Which calf jack do you prefer? So I just thought I'd bring out that. That's my personal favorite, the Dr. Franks, but some people hate them. So just depends. And I am also not sponsored by Dr. Franks. So as to your question about genetics, heritability, et cetera, that's one of the most ubiquitous questions that I get asked, both on small and large animal. You know, people bring an animal to me and they'll say, well, is this going to happen again? Is this heritable? Or most people just say, is it genetic? And there is a difference between being genetic and being heritable. Being genetic means it's coded for in your genes. Being heritable is about how likely an animal that shows a certain trait is to have a certain gene. So essentially, heritabilities are decided on a 0-to-1 basis. So if you have something where environmental factors or a whole bunch of different genes are involved, it might have a mid-level heritability, like a 0.6, 0.7. If you have something where there is only one gene and you kind of either have it or you don't, and you always express it if you have the gene, then you'll probably have a heritability closer to one. And so that's generally how they decide, okay, it's genetic, but is it inherited? Because you can have a gene for something that never comes out. There's a whole bunch of reasons why that's possible. And some genes are more likely to throw a heritable trait than other genes. So I could have I could carry a gene for something that's never going to happen to me, essentially. And so I think that's something we need to talk about a little bit more, is incomplete expression, which I won't get into. I'm certainly not a geneticist, and I don't mean to say that I am, but there are different patterns of how much something shows and how heritable it is. So there's a lot of genetic disorders in food animals that are really heritable, but there's also a lot that aren't. One of my most common things is I'll get a calf that'll come out and, you know, like let's say an eight-legged calf or a calf with a water head or something, that's not likely to be heritable. And in fact, it may not even be genetic. It's very possible that that's actually something that would happen during development, essentially being exposed to a toxin or stress or a lot of other kind of almost random chance things that can happen, as opposed to being truly something that was coded for, if that makes sense. And sometimes also it's a variable expression, meaning, yeah, there might be other ones that carry the gene, but this is the one in a million chance that it came out. However, there are other traits that seem to be harder to code genetically because they involve a lot of genes, but they're very heritable. For example, if you have an itchy dog and you breed your itchy dog, you will probably breed a whole bunch more itchy dogs. Because even though that's controlled by a number of different genes, and even though it's a lot more complicated, expression generally means that they're going to have that heritable trait and that it's going to move on. And I've seen that firsthand time and time again.
So I know this is maybe going to sound a little odd. Are there some of those traits that are very breed specific? And I know I'm thinking a lot about beef cows. Is there a breed that's more prolific in twins? But could that also be the case in even dogs and cats, that there are some things that are just very specific to that particular breed of animal?
So there's no, like, to my knowledge, I should say, there's no gene thing where we know for sure that there's a gene that controls multiparity or having multiple babies. However, it does seem to be more common in certain breeds that they have multiple ovulations and they do have multiple parities, or that they do have multiple babies. Certain breeds of goat are more likely than others to have quads, for example. Less so, I think, in cattle, although certainly I have seen more sim and sim type cattle with multiples, but that may be anecdotal and may just be my experience. In cats and dogs, certainly there are certain breeds that seem to be predisposed to having very, very large litters. And there's also familial expression. So sometimes, you know, as a vet, I've been practicing for about 10 years now. Sometimes I've seen a dog and then her daughters. And sometimes her daughters will also have very large litters if she did. So even beyond just the breed, there's sometimes familial expression as well. And you certainly see that with cows as well. You see that, you know, certain times you'll see ones that are twins and they beget more twins and whatnot all. It's a little more it's a little simpler with inherited genes that are more directly inherited, you know, really specific traits. Things like umbilical hernias, those tend to be heritable, especially you even see in humans, they're heritable. In dogs, they've proven they're heritable. And in cattle, it's assumed. So I generally recommend if something needs a hernia surgery at any point in time, that it also be, if it's a cat or a dog, you know, spayed or neutered, or if it's, you know, a cow or calf, I just recommend that people not continue to breed them because there is a pretty strong heritability quotient for things like umbilical hernias. You know, I know in the AVMA, they say that, you know, dogs, they're also worried about some of these inherited cancers now. They're finding more that lymphoma, mast cell tumor, hemangiosarcoma, that there is a genetic link within certain breeds. With dogs also, hip and elbow dysplasia, that's one they found genetic testing isn't as useful as testing parents before they're bred, but I really strongly push if it's a breed with a predisposition to hip and elbow dysplasia, like most of the sporting breeds, I generally push people before they decide to breed their dog, because there are plenty of dogs out there and I do not want to see dogs with serious hip dysplasia being bred, I recommend at least getting hip scores. That's where your vet takes an x-ray, sends it to be evaluated by a special group that essentially is able to predict, okay, the dog's hips look like this at 2 years old. How are they going to look when it's 10? And help decide whether or not that dog is good to breed. And same thing with the elbows. We had a case in town here a couple years ago where a dog was under 2 years old and ended up not being able to live a full life because the hip dysplasia was so severe. There are some things you can do surgically, but it's very hard to correct them. And I think that it's really part of being a responsible dog breeder. If you're not willing to do that, I really would recommend maybe reconsidering breeding your dog, especially if it's a sporting dog.
So that was interesting. You said you can literally have x-rays done and sent somewhere to be scored, a hip score. Where do those x-rays go? Do they stay within the breed, or is there a specialization within veterinarians?
There's a specialization within veterinarians. So I send mine to the Orthopedic Foundation for Animals. Vets can be trained for pen hip scoring. That's a little bit different style of hip scoring. Some people prefer that. This is kind of one of those kind of controversial things. I still do OFA rads. I find them to work really well for me and the people around me. And so what we do is I take very, very specific views, and then I send them off to a boarded radiologist who specifically works for Orthopedic Foundation for Animals and does this all day, every day. They charge the client a small amount to essentially for their expertise, and then they send back a report saying a score of how good the hips are and what that kind of means for the breeding prognosis of the dog. And they've been super helpful. It's really helped a lot of breeds like Golden Retriever, for example, which is one of the kind of hallmark hip dysplasia breeds, or Labrador. It's really helped a lot of those breeds kind of weed out some genetics that they wouldn't be able to see otherwise. Because that's the hard thing, is your dog may be the nicest dog. It may never have had health problems yet, but it's also, you know, 4 years old and you're trying to breed it. It's possible there's something that's going to come out 2 years later and you're really going to wish that you had given it more thought. So I highly recommend doing this for the health of the puppies. It's really sad to see young dogs with things we can't fix or things that are really difficult or expensive to fix. And I think it's important to be responsible when we decide to breed, especially sporting breed dogs.
That is a huge, huge point. So as we kind of wrap things up here, Emily, folks are making trips to town. They're picking up parts to work on stuff in the shop. Calving season for a lot of people has slowly begun. We're going to see a pretty big peak on that into March, into April. If, as a vet running a clinic, what are things that you're going to remind people if you're going to town to pick up, to have on hand before the calves really start hitting the ground?
I was actually just finishing our little newsletter here, and I've got my little checklist right here, actually. So I always tell people to check, make sure before they're calving that they've got their calf jack, which I showed you, chains and or straps, gloves and lube. No judgment to those who don't use gloves, but like, please use gloves. Colostrum replacer, electrolytes. Some people like to have some antibiotics on hand, or maybe some steroids or anti-inflammatories. Talk to your vet about that. We have a bunch of different ones. And then some people also vaccinate right away to their calves depending on their system. So any vaccines that you normally use, a lot of people supplement vitamin EAD. I was just reading some research recently that suggests that a lot more animals in this area than I thought are probably vitamin A deficient. So, you know, certainly something to consider. And then some people also like to have like a head snare. If you band at birth, you're going to want your calf bands. And then some people use like nursemate, nasal spray, calf perk, any of those kind of additional options. The other thing I always tell people is, make sure that you do have your emergency plan thought out. Like, you know, make sure there's nothing in your way to get to your head gate at home. Make sure if you're likely to have to haul your animal to the vet that maybe you kind of know where the ball for the trailer is, or that you kind of have things dug out. And certainly just kind of be prepared for that kind of thing.
And Emily, we've got a email question from one of our viewers that were watching on our live stream. They said, what was with the confetti with Dr. Fox's live stream?
So I don't know. And actually, that's why I kind of froze and kind of rambled there for a minute, because I don't really know. And I thought to myself, is this like when you send a text message and there's like an automatic something? But I don't think that's what it was. So I don't know if I said something that made the phone really excited that it wanted to throw confetti. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I said like birth or something. I'm trying it again to see if I can get the confetti to come up.
Okay.
That's a real mystery. Maybe your tech services guy just really thought it would be cool to make my office look cooler than it is with this cool fake wood paneling behind me that I needed confetti. next time I'm hoping they'll give me like a Snapchat filter, maybe like a cat sitting on my head.
There you
cool
go.
Sunglasses. Whatever you guys want to do. It's cool.
Emily, your interviews are so good. Confetti just gets randomly thrown on the video. It's fabulous. Okay, wait. Where's Ashley Vet Clinic? Where can people find you? I've seen just marvelous upgrades to your Facebook page these days, by the way.
So those are all the response of my office manager, Megan Spur. She's done an amazing job with our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook. We now post more than like the twice a year that I was doing. So she's really upgraded us. You can find us on our Facebook page or Ashley Vet Clinic at Outlook.com. And I'm happy to help however I can.
Thank you. Thank you for all of the answers today, for the fun that we had. Ed, you bring props, which scares Addison in the control room just a little bit, but I love it when you do. So thank you to you for joining us today, Emily. We really appreciate that.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Thanks. You too. Stay warm, Emily. We do have some warmer weather in the forecast, and that's great news for everybody. We'll give you the warmer details coming up here right after the break. Hey, welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. It's 5 below, and wind chills are hanging right around 20 to 25 below across much of the area. So, the cold weather continues here, as we were hinting at earlier in the show, all the way through. Looks like the end of the week. Through Thursday. Things do start to warm up a bit on Friday, but we'll notice a big change in the weather as we head into the upcoming weekend with temperatures in the 30s, maybe even a few rain showers. That's right, a few scattered light sprinkles or showers Sunday night into early Monday. But again, not a big deal, but what a difference a week is going to make from last week, or from this week, I should say, to next week. It's really going to make a big difference. And Bridget, as I was saying, some people I know down in Nebraska doing, they're just about undergoing calving season right now, and they don't like the cold weather that's entrenched through much of the central part of the U.S.
Well, I would say that there's no one who's thrilled about it. I mean, even currently Canadians are complaining, and that's shocking, but they're even saying, this is enough. We're ready for something different.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. What I saw 10 days ago at 26 inches of ice on Devil's Lake, it's probably over 30 by now. Really, when you think about it, we have likely really built some quite solid ice up there. And this is probably the nicest ice I've ever seen on that lake, shockingly enough.
Yeah. And I think the bad part of this is hopefully, we get a slow thaw into spring, because if we end up getting a quick attempted quick thaw with rain instead of snow, that's not going to be good for our farmers as well. That's just going to all run off. And so hopefully we have a nice slow thaw and we get a little thicker snowpack, which I do believe we will, over the next 6 weeks. So fingers crossed. Let's hope that's how it pans out.
Well, I might as well send you my March travel schedule so that you can just coincide all the storms with it.
Yeah, right.
That would work out great for me.
Yep. Right.
Okay. So for those who are thinking ahead about 2025, you might be using a product like Liberty Ultra. Liberty Ultra is going to be new in the market. It's a more concentrated form of glufosinate, and we use that not only in canola, but soybeans and corn. And the new label language coming out is going to be a little bit different than what farmers and custom applicators have seen in the past. On those labels, due to the Endangered Species Act, there's now some verbiage that has a 9-point checklist that you're supposed to go through and determine if you meet the criteria to spray the Liberty Ultra on that field. Do you have buffer zones? Do you have grass waterways? What types of mitigation measures are in place to prevent off-target drift, runoff, etc.? The question, though, is who is responsible for the information after the fact? If you're a commercial applicator, you know that you have to turn in your records for restricted use pesticides. But there isn't a clear definition of where this checklist goes, if you actually need to document it. It looks like right now it's information on the label. Will things change with the EPA down the road that we're going to have more enforcement or anything like that? Don't really know. But just as a reminder that if you're looking at spraying Liberty Ultra this year, again, that's the concentrated formulation of glufosinate, pay attention to what that says. Maybe ask your ag chem retailers, or if you come across your state inspectors, just to get a little better picture of what that's going to be.
All right. All right. Well, we want to thank everybody today for joining us on Weather and Ag in Focus. Again, hang tight. We will see warmer weather. I promise. I don't make many promises. We'll see warmer weather, though, by the weekend. So for Bridget, myself, thank you once again. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show, that's coming up next.